Deuteronomy chapter 2. Then we turned back and set out toward the desert along the route to the Red Sea, as the Lord had directed me. For a long time we made our way around the hill country of Seir. Then the Lord said to me, "You have made your way around this hill country long enough. Now turn north. Give the people these orders. You are about to pass through the territory of your brothers, the descendants of Esau, who live in Seir. They will be afraid of you, but be very careful. Do not provoke them to war, for I will not give you any of their land, not even enough to put your foot on. I have given Esau the hill country of Seir as his own. You are to pay them in silver for the food you eat and the water you drink. The Lord your God has blessed you in all the work of your hands. He has watched over your journey through these vast desert. These 40 years the Lord your God has been with you, and you have not lacked anything." So we went on past our brothers, the descendants of Esau, who live in Seir. We turned from the Arabah road, which comes up from Elot and Ezion Geber, and traveled along the desert road of Moab. Then the Lord said to me, "Do not harass the Moabites or provoke them to war, for I will not give you any part of their land. I have given Ar to the descendants of Lot as a possession. The Edomites used to live there, a people strong and numerous and as tall as the Anakites. Like the Anakites, they too were considered Rephaites, but the Moabites called them Emites. Horites used to live in Seir, but the descendants of Esau drove them out. They destroyed the Horites from before them and settled in their place, just as Israel did in the land the Lord gave them as their possession." The Lord said, "Now get up and cross the Zered Valley." So we crossed the valley. 38 years passed from the time we left Kadesh Barnea until we crossed the Zered Valley. By then, that entire generation of fighting men had perished from the camp, as the Lord had sworn to them. The Lord's hand was against them until he had completely eliminated them from the camp. Now, when the last of these fighting men among the people had died, the Lord said to me, "Today you are to pass by the region of Moab and Ar. When you come to the Ammonites, do not harass them or provoke them to war, for I will not give you possession of any land belonging to the Ammonites. I have given it as a possession to the descendants of Lot." That too was considered a land of the Rephaites, who used to live there. But the Ammonites called them Zamzumites. They were people strong and numerous, and as tall as the Anakites. The Lord destroyed them from before the Ammonites, who drove them out and settled in their place. The Lord had done the same for the descendants of Esau who lived in Seir, when he destroyed the Horites from before them. They drove them out and have lived in their place to this day. And as for the Avivites, who lived in villages as far as Gaza, the Kaphirites, coming out from Kaphtor, destroyed them and settled in their place. Set out now and cross the Arnon Gorge. See, I have given into your hand Sihon the Amorite, king of Heshbon, and his country. Begin to take possession of it and engage him in battle. This very day I will begin to put the terror and fear of you on all the nations under heaven. They will hear reports of you and tremble and be in anguish because of you. From the desert of Kedemot I sent messengers to Sihon king of Heshbon offering peace and saying, "Let us pass through your country. We will stay on the main road. We will not turn aside to the right or to the left. Sell us food to eat and water to drink for a price in silver. Only let us pass through on foot, as the descendants of Esau who lived in Seir and the Moabites who live in Ar did for us, until we cross the Jordan into the land the Lord our God is giving us." But Sihon king of Heshbon refused to let us pass through, For the Lord your God made his spirit stubborn and his heart obstinate in order to give him into your hands, as he now has done. The Lord said to me, See, I have begun to deliver Sihon and his country over to you. Now begin to conquer and possess his land. When Sihon and his whole army came out to meet us in battle at Jahaz, the Lord our God delivered him over to us, and we struck him down, together with his sons and his whole army. At that time we took all his towns and completely destroyed them, men, women, and children. We left no survivors. But the livestock and the plunder from the towns we had captured, we carried off for ourselves. From Aroer on the rim of the Arnon Gorge, and from the town in the gorge, even as far as Gilead, not one town was too strong for us. The Lord our God gave us all of them, but in accordance with the command of the Lord our God, we did not encroach on any land of the Ammonites, neither the land along the course of the Jabbok, nor that around the towns in the hills. Chapter 3. Next we turned and went up along the road toward Bashan, and Og, king of Bashan, and his whole army marched out to meet us in battle at Edrei. The Lord said to me, Do not be afraid of him, for I have handed him over to you with his whole army and his land. Do to him what you did to Sihon, king of the Amorites, who reigned in Heshbon. So the Lord our God also gave into our hands Og, king of Bashan, and all his army. We struck them down, leaving no survivors. At that time, we took all his cities. There was not one of the 60 cities that we did not take from them. The whole region of Argob, Og's kingdom in Bashan, all these cities were fortified with high walls and with gates and bars, and there was a great many unwalled villages. We completely destroyed them, as we had done with Sihon, king of Heshbon, destroying every city, men, women, and children. But all the livestock and the plunder from their cities we carried off for ourselves. So at that time, we took from these two kings of the Amorites the territory east of the Jordan from the Arnon Gorge as far as Mount Hermon. Hermon is called Sirion by the Sidonians, and the Amorites call it Seir. We took all the towns on the plateau, and all Gilead, and all Bashan as far as Salaka, and Edrei, towns of Og's kingdom in Bashan. Only Og, king of Bashan, was left to the remnant of the Rephaites. His bed was made of iron and was more than 13 feet long and 6 feet wide. It is still in Rabbah of the Ammonites. Of the land that we took over at that time, I gave the Reubenites and the Gadites the territory north of Aroer by the Arnon Gorge, including half the hill country of Gilead, together with its towns. The rest of Gilead and all of Bashan, the kingdom of Og, I gave to the half-tribe of Manasseh. The whole region of Argob in Bashan used to be known as a land of the Rephaites. Yair, a descendant of Manasseh, took the whole region of Argob as far as the border of the Jeshurites and the Machites. It was named after him, so that to this day Bashan is called Havot Yair. And I gave Gilead to Machir, but to the Reubenites and the Gadites I gave the territory extending from Gilead down to the Arnon Gorge, in the middle of the gorge being the border, and out to the Yabbok River, which is the border of the Ammonites. Its western border, from the Jordan to the Arabah, from Kinneret to the Sea of the Arabah, the Salt Sea, below the slopes of Pisgah. I commanded you at that time, The Lord your God has given you this land to take possession of it. But all your able-bodied men, armed for battle, must cross over ahead of your brother Israelites. However, your wives, your children, and your livestock, I know you have much livestock, may stay in the towns I have given you until the Lord gives the rest of your brothers as he has to you. And they, too, have taken over the land that the Lord your God is giving them across the Jordan. After that, each of you may go back to the possession I have given you. At that time, I commanded Joshua, you have seen with your own eyes all that the Lord your God has done to these two kings. The Lord will do the same to all the kingdoms over there where you are going. Do not be afraid of them. The Lord your God himself will fight for you. At that time I pleaded with the Lord, O sovereign Lord, you have begun to show to your servant your greatness and your strong hand. For what God is there in heaven or on earth who can do the deeds and mighty works you do? Let me go over and see the good land beyond the Jordan, that fine country and Lebanon. But because of you, the Lord was angry with me and would not listen to me. That is enough, the Lord said. Do not speak to me any more about this matter. Go up to the top of Pisgah and look west and north and south and east. Look to the land with your own eyes, since you are not going to cross the Jordan. But commission Joshua and encourage and strengthen him, for he will lead this people across and will cause them to inherit the land that you will see. So we stayed in the valley near Beit Peor.
Any comments? Yes, sir. Yes.
Chapter 1, verse 30 said that Yahweh had hardened his spirit. That's what he did to Pharaoh too, right?
Correct.
Same way.
He also did to Joshua. He also did to David.
Hardened his heart?
Yeah. Anybody remember what that word means?
I know what it means. Intensify,
strengthen,
and reveals it.
Given power, given courage. You know, when you read there in the book of Joshua, where God says he strengthened or gave courage, that means the same word means he hardened Joshua's heart. Well, that's a negative word in the 2003, 2007, 2006, whatever we're in now. That's a negative terminology, but that's not what that Hebrew meant when it was written. And it meant he gave him strength inside. He toughened him up. In other words, we'd use modern terminology like, he gave him guts. That's what we'd use in modern terminology today to be able to do it. And so as all the Hebrew uses the word heart, we need to understand that's the core of the person to have them do decisions and carry out decisions is the heart. Or we would call in modern terms, if you don't have enough guts, you know, don't bother going.
So when Pharaoh, when he would kind of faint away a little bit,
God then therefore gave him guts to do it again.
Okay.
He strengthened him by, quote, harden his heart. It's an old English word, which is kind of misunderstood to modern terminology. Any other comments?
How big was that king? That is big, so he must have been pretty big.
How big what?
Org. How big was that guy, the king, Org? His bed was really huge.
Yeah, well, that's a pretty good size, pretty tall guy. And not only just in height, but also in broadness.
Yeah.
He was a muscular bound individual. They didn't sit and get fat those days. They actually worked. They weren't sitting there watching television and getting fat on the couch. Yes.
Had never noticed before that even though God said he had hated Esau, he would not let them take their territory. He protected them in their territory, and Lot's descendants also.
Yeah, we'll get to that a little bit story today. We're going to find out if you know about that, about Esau. Because sometimes we don't understand what hate, when God says, I hated Esau, and I love Jacob, we don't know what that means. Because we use it on an emotional feeling. Mm-hmm. And God doesn't use it on emotional feelings. Right. He uses it on an action. Right. Okay? So it's really easy. You know, it's like, let's see, how do we say this? When we get something from God, we feel we got a blessing. But actually what God did, He just gave us love. It's an act of love. If He takes something away from us, what is that? That's a curse, which should be translated, He hated me. Because He didn't bless me. If you don't get a blessing from God, then that means He's hated you. If you got a blessing from God, that means He loved you. It doesn't mean He's neutral. It just means that He did not listen or respond to Esau. It's like He did Jacob. And when that part about Him, He hated Esau and loved Jacob, that section of the prophets, He was trying to tell Israel, and you despise me. And Esau didn't. But something's wrong with the picture here. Yes, it's very interesting here about with Esau. And a couple of comments about it. Any more? All right, now, he reads out of NIV. Yeah. In Hebrew, there's certain statements that are listed in there, and some of you people will have what we call a parenthesis around a sentence or two. And the reason why those parentheses are around those is because the names are listed there didn't exist at the time of Moses speaking. So they were inserted, if I can use that terminology, to explain modern times of where. Let's get to one spot where you can spot real quickly that we know that it didn't occur during his lifetime.
Chapter 10, verse 2.
Well, first we're going to go to chapter 2 first, okay? Okay. And verse 10. Now, what's happening when they studied Hebrew grammar, they saw that grammar had changed at this particular point in time. And that's the reason why you have, in some of your translations, a parentheses. Because now the phrase is different. It's more, quote, modern Hebrew, end of quote, than what was before. All right? If I can explain that a little bit. Listen very carefully what it says here. I'm going to read it in this one translation. And Amin, which dwelt there in the times of the past, the people of great numbered and tall as the Achaemenim. They were also regarded as giants, or Achaemenim, like the Achaemenim, but the Moabites called them Amin. And the Hororites formerly dwelt in Seir. Now, but the descendants of Esau disposed them and destroyed them from before them and dwelt in their place, just as Israel did to the land they possessed, which God gave them. Well, he hadn't even gotten in there yet. Okay, so the statement is that, well, we're seeing a statement of someone who wrote in there, just as God blessed Esau by helping him overcome the enemy, God also blessed Israel when they came in and took over their land and blessed them. And maybe the people was Hororites. Hororites, very fascinating little thing. What you'll find out in this little thing, we have the Gulf of Aqaba. Everybody knows where the Gulf of Aqaba is? Okay. That did not belong to Israel. It belonged to Esau. That whole section there belonged to Esau. The tip of the Gulf did not belong. It was taken over by military force by King Solomon. And that's how it became property of Israel at that point in time. So we have a knowing that it didn't belong to Israel until King Solomon came on the scene and took it. And then it was retaken back, and I think it was King Hezekiah came back and with his army and retook it again. So it's been kind of like back and forth. But the Gulf of Aqaba is, remember I said last week why the sea was called Red Sea? Do you remember why?
Yeah.
Because Esau, that was the borderland of Esau. Now, just to go back just a little bit farther, so you know, remember, Esau and Edom are the same person, right? Mm-hmm. So let's go back just for a moment to Exodus. I want to go to, I think it's the... In the 17th chapter, you don't have to go there, but you remember when they were about ready to go to the Mount Sinai? And lo and behold, a bunch of Amalek came and went to war. And it lasted for one day. Do you know who Amalek is? Amalek, it was descendant of, or he was the firstborn son of Esau. So we have from the very beginning that going on. So that whole territory, you understand, was called Edom, or Esau, or we call Mount, or this is the region of the mountains of Seir. And that whole area is the reason why it's called the Red Sea. Remember? I told you, of course, fascinated to know that their first enemy they faced was of the family of descendants of Esau. Jealousy is still there. It hadn't changed. And then we go in here in Deuteronomy where he says something about Esau. Now, in it says down here, verse 5 of chapter 2, do not meddle with them, for I will not give you any of the land, nor shall such a one step foot, because I have given the Mount Seir, that whole mountain range, to Esau as a possession. You shall buy food from them, money, and they buy money, and you will eat, and they shall also buy water from them with money that you shall eat. For your Lord your God has blessed you in the works of your hand. He knows your trudging through the great wilderness. These 40 years the Lord has been given you, has been lacking. You have lacked absolutely nothing. So now they're entering in. You know, as we read onward, I think it was the next chapter, if I'm not mistaken, where Moses goes through this territory. We went through the land of Esau, and we didn't go to war. We went through the land of Moab. We didn't go to war. And then lo and behold, now they ran into these other two kings, right? And to let you know, this point is past history. I hate to use that word. What I'm saying is that the authors who put this thing together used the name of an individual, one of the sons of Manasseh, who conquered part of the eastern side of Jordan. They didn't succeedingly do that until the book of Judges. So we have an author telling us how he managed to do this, but much later in time. So we know the book of Deuteronomy has got some history in there, and also has, like the book of Numbers, there is subject matters they're dealing with, not necessarily time sequence of events, but subject matters to bring out a point or to bring out a section. This needs to be, the reason why I'm saying this is because so many people will challenge the issue over that there is contradiction if everything is in sequential order. Because how could Moses know anything about what happened almost 200-300 years after his death? That was actually a past tense event. And knew the name of the man who did it. So we have a look at this thing, and we have to say, so the author who's putting this book together is basically talking about the words of is Devarim, right?
Words
of
Moses.
Keep that part in mind. It's the words of Moses, not the words of the Lord. Okay? And so it's very important why it's written this way and why we are to pay attention to the words of Moses. You know, when all the prophets from this point forward, Joshua all the way to the minor prophets, they use Deuteronomy as the number one source. Yes.
Well, if you're saying that these are the words of Moses and not of the Lord, that begs the question then. When you see, like here in verse 9 of chapter 2, the Lord said to me,
right?
Did the Lord actually say that to him?
Well, yeah, I'm not saying the Lord didn't say it to him, but see, the book of, what we're saying is, this is not the words of the Lord. That's what the book, whole book of Deuteronomy is based upon, the words of Moses.
But if that's, Moses is quoting the Lord, are those actually the words of the Lord?
Well, that's true at that particular point. Okay. He's just backing up his evidence. That's not unusual for that to take place. You can quote the President of the United States, but you're still quoting. People are going to hear what you have to say, and you may quote the President. So what? We're still talking about the subject matter of why this book is called the Book of Moses. By the way, this is called the Book of Moses. Not the books of Moses, but the Book of Moses. Okay? Read my, they use the term the five books of Moses. It is basically thus what the story's all about from Genesis leading all the way up to Deuteronomy, is what Moses did. You got Exodus about Moses, Leviticus about Moses, Numbers about Moses, and Deuteronomy about Moses. All you left over is Genesis, right? And Genesis leads you directly to Moses. So, you know, keep that part in mind as we go through the book of Genesis. I mean, book of Deuteronomy. And some of the things I had to research on and find out exactly, you know, I was kind of, I'm like one of the people kind of curious, the pathway. And I have to kind of go online and look at the maps, you know. Everybody's got an idea where they were, you know. But there's certain things that is quoted in here. And one of those is that interesting valley of Zion, Zidid. Let's see, chapter 1, chapter 3, really. Or maybe it's in chapter 2. Chapter 2, verse 13. Now rise and cross over the valley of Zirad. So he crossed over the valley of Zirad. Now, where is that? Well, it's east. And it's the most southern section of the Dead Sea. And it's east. The valley's still there. And a wadi, a river, goes right down through that valley. So we know they went that direction, that route. It's quite a fascinating. And the land when he starts quoting the other two areas of verse 9, 8 rather, of Eilat and Zion Gibur. Zion Gibur is the Gulf of Aqaba. It is the main little city up there. Eilat was east, west of it. And they still, those two cities, by the way, still exist today. Different names, but they still exist. Of course, they exist under the Israeli government and not under any other government. But it's quite interesting. Those old cities are still there. They don't look the same, of course, but they're still there. You remember Solomon built, during the time of Solomon, he went to war and he took it over because he wanted to do something. He wanted to build ships for merchants because still, that particular area of the world was the central location of all merchandise being transferred from one part of the world to another part of the world. Everything went through that particular spot. And so he wanted to build his a ship of fleets of merchants, and therefore he took it over and built himself a lot of ships of merchants.
It's my understanding that the Americans have a navy port there right now, and it's supposed to be a big secret.
Well, that may be true. I do not know. It would not surprise me. I don't know where we would ever, a navy port, but not necessarily navy ships there, because those would be too easy to spot. You can actually get online and you can zero in on that set area of the world, and you can zero in on, you start seeing the cities, start seeing the roads, start seeing the mountain range, start seeing quite a beautiful area when you take a look at it online, from the satellites from going down. It's kind of a cool little thing to look at. All right. Any more comments? Any more thoughts? One thing I found very interesting here is that the two kings, they had a slaughter. You know, they did a major amount. Nothing was left of the two. And remember Daniel went in to talk about Joshua? What did the lady said? We heard what you did with those two kings. I mean, nothing was left. Talk about annihilation. It took place. And he named 60 cities. I don't know what the names would be, but they're all been taken over. You know, and so they were also terrified or afraid. Like she would said, they were afraid. Not only what took place there in Egypt as they crossed over and what happened to the land of Egypt, but also to what happened to those two particular kings. Now, what was so special about these two particular kings? One of them had a bit of what?
Iron.
There were, they were powerful, strong. And he said all 60 cities, if I'm not mistaken, were fortified military cities. They didn't live in communities around the country. They lived in fortified cities. So they were very powerful, powerful militarily. Esau didn't have that many military cities. Moab didn't have that many military cities. But these two particular kings had a lot. They were basically a dictatorship from a military point of view. The kings were just that. They were powerful, and they had military strength and might on their side, and if people wouldn't dare cross over or challenge them, because what would happen to them? They'd be killed. Because these two kings were powerful kings. They weren't just a bunch of nobodies. Sometimes we read this thing, and they were wiped out so quick and so fast, you figured, oh, there must have been a bunch of, you know, a couple of kings that were kind of like weak and not too very smart, and they were easily defeated. But what Moses said, what? Fortified cities. They were very powerful, very strong. That's why they were not afraid to fight against Israel. Where Moab was afraid, Seir was afraid, because what? They just lost the other battle 40 years ago to them, and they were all defeated on the spot at before the Israelites hit Mount Sinai. So Edom already was pretty well aware of the strength and the power of Israel. Okay? And so it says there, this one translation, that they were afraid. Yes?
I've noticed, Yahweh always has somebody picking on Israel that's bigger than them. than Israel. And Israel, if they're minding their P's and Q's and follow, then they always win.
Courage always comes when the odds are against you. Courage doesn't come when the odds are on your side.
Doesn't need to.
Don't need to.
Yeah. I love the definition of courage. It's not the absence of fear, but facing fear and hitting it head on.
And hitting it head on. And that's why when God gave to Moses, I mean, gave to Joshua the three times, he said, be of strength and be of courage. And I will harden your heart in order to do all three of those things. In other words, I will give you strength in your heart that you will be able to endure those things. But one of the interesting things with Daniel read is that when Joshua was ready to enter into the promised land, he sent in some spies, right? Why? After he got the report back, he was feeling great relief that God's going to do it. Because he still had to face fear. Right? If Joshua, sometimes we look at these heroes in our Bible and we don't realize that they faced odds that were greatly against them. Moses faced odds that were greatly against him. Well, see, we don't look at him as being someone who had great odds against him. Remember when God sent him there? Not even the leadership of Israel liked him. They were against him. Right? And during the entire time of the traveling, they were against him. You know, odds were not in his favor. They were against him. And so he had to deal with those things. And one of the greatest things he had to deal with, or one of the greatest things he had to deal with, you remember the story, is that when they challenged his leadership, what did Moses do?
He went before the Lord.
Prostrated down on the ground. Why? Because he needed strength and courage from God to face that conflict. We just think, oh, he was just righteous, man. He went down. No, he has to present himself before God and say, in a sense, I need your intervention here. And guess what happened? Intervention came. Right? So each one of us, sometimes we find trials and difficulties that are against us. And sometimes we think and say, okay, God is against me. Well, not necessarily. Maybe he wants you to be courageous and bold and have courage. I mean, that's the object of leadership, right? Yes.
That's beginning to be the problem with this country, I think, where we're relying more on our own strength and weapons than the Father.
Yeah. And it's going to be, it's our weak point, you know.
Yeah.
But see, God has to break that. If he doesn't break it, then we can say, we can boast before God. You know, as sad as it may sound, we have to be broken in order that we will not boast.
Yeah.
All right? There's nothing more? That's pretty well wrapped it up. Okay?